This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
Patrick, okay, where does last night's exorcism of Yankees history rank among great Twins victories over the last 20 years?
I was wondering originally if seven runs, when the last time the Twins had a seven-run inning against the Yankees, and then they hit another home run to make it nine, and then it's the biggest inning in the history, at least in Yankee Stadium, and I'm sure they never had a bigger one at any of their ballparks here. So it was amazing to watch. And once again, we discovered what a bandbox that place was, too. I mean, congratulations to Eddie Julian on his first home run, but that was a pop-up. And then the Correa's wasn't exactly a rocket in right center. That was amazing because that ball was way in right center, and it still went out. Yeah. Judd should have an asterisk by his home run total last year. That ballpark is just cheap beyond belief. That said, they didn't wait long for this kid Britos. He hung everything, his changeup, his curveball, everything, and they killed it. So I think everybody got a lift when Correa and Buxton were both in the lineup.
Except
me, because I had a mini heart attack when I saw they did that. I was so shocked that Rocco had those two guys in the lineup.
What is happening here? So we're rushing guys back from injury, which is great.
Yes.
And starting pitchers are allowed to go, gasp, seven innings this year for the Twins? It's happened multiple times.
Yes, it is. It's Rocco's defense is he's got good pitchers throwing well, as opposed to what he had in the past. So anyway.
But bringing Buxton back, he is now, Pat, brought Buxton back after, in air quotes, injuries twice. This is a different Rocco. This is a Rocco who might say, you know what, it's baseball. I can play.
You know, he probably leaves it up to Buxton instead of him, and his maybe the one thing the new trainer has that they fired Salazar is he's not as cautious, perhaps. Yeah, hell, if something happens, we'll fix him. Maybe he's got that attitude. I don't know. Although you can take comfort in the fact that they brought up Louis Varland to pitch today so Maeda could get an extra day. So but I think the way Maeda's throwing the ball, that's not a bad idea because there isn't much life on those pitches right now.
Yeah.
And not even that's a bad idea. But, the other team is struggling with their chucking when Michael A. Taylor goes deep twice. So
how about that? Yeah.
But, give him credit. He plays every day. Yeah. You never have to worry about who's going to be in center field. He's been hitting eighth or ninth and played every game, right? Amen. And we never hear about the need to give him a day off. And that's good.
Pat, there's a great Twitter account called Would It Dong. And it's basically, it's an automated Twitter account robot that takes home runs and puts it, would this be a home run in any other ballpark? So Carlos Correa's bomb would be a home run at Yankee Stadium and nowhere else yesterday. Julian's home run would be a home run in only 11 out of 30 ballparks yesterday. Taylor's first home run would only be a home run in 13 out of 30 ballparks yesterday.
But they did. Taylor went straight away on one of those.
Yes.
Too, right?
Yeah, that one was straight away. Was good.
That one would have been anywhere,
yes,
probably.
Yes.
But, God, it's what were they thinking? Out in Chanhassen, they built the new baseball softball complex. And the guys, when they were building the softball complex, they said, okay, these are the dimensions. You know, well, the guy building it, he measured it from the grandstand. So everything's like 20 feet short. That's like Yankee Stadium. Did they lay this out and then say, oh God, we screwed up. We built this, you know, it was supposed to be another 15 feet back. But it's, but anyway, it was fun. It was fun to watch. And then Joe Ryan's just, you know, dealing. And he didn't even look like he was grunting on his fastball last night when he had that lead, did he? He just kind of letting it go and threw a lot of fastballs, made Aaron Judge look terrible. And it was, I don't know if it excised a lot of demons, but it certainly was, not what you expected when the Twins start, when the Twins, with the issues they have injury wise, started a 4-game series in Yankee Stadium, right?
Yeah.
What was the stat, by the way? 3-, what have they been in there the last? I mean, it's incredible.
I think, overall, they're like 39-110 against the Yankees over the last 20 years, 22 years. Or
I think Michael Kay said 3 wins since 2017, I think, at Yankee Stadium or something. It was bad.
Declan, wasn't it fun listening to Michael Kay and the guy last night? Because they don't like say, you know, they're saying, boy, this is terrible. You know, they're not trying to rescue the franchise from a humiliating defeat. They had 39,000 announced attendance there last night to watch that fiasco. And the way that somebody was saying, the way the games are going now, everybody gets to Yankee Stadium two innings late. They walked in and said, oh, game over, and they left.
How about Paul O'Neill not knowing that Billy Martin was the manager for the Twins?
The Twins, yes. That was... that gave me some good Twitter material when he said it. He managed the Twins. I can't believe it. Well, that was his first job, Paul. You know, that's the first managing job before he. And then he said he had a short shelf life. Well, he didn't have a short shelf life with the Yankees. He had 6 short shelf lives with the Yankees.
He had multiple shelves. Multiple shelves. Yes.
6 times. 6 times. Anyway, it was fun. It was interesting to watch, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, so okay, Michael Taylor. I don't think he's gonna hit 30 home runs this year, but he's one of the better defensive center fielders. He's holding his own early on with the bat, right? Buxton's playing pretty well at DH. I mean, what do you think? Do you think they just kind of keep him at DH until they need to put him in the outfield? What do you think happens?
I don't think they're going to put him back in the center field this year. If Taylor keeps playing and he doesn't get hurt and Buxton's able to play 5-6 days a week, you know, they'll probably just let him DH. It's not like it's not like other DHs are pounding on the door saying, let me go here. What do you think? I mean,
I don't know if you can just like sunset his whole outfield career at this point, but if he's going to DH, he's going to be in there 135, 140 games versus the risk of putting him out. And I mean, look, you're letting him run the bases and he collides with a second baseman.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I just think that, they're going to take right now. This is working. So they're not going to, I don't think they're going to mess with it. But I think we've all agreed that half of his value is the way he plays center field. And so. But I haven't seen a lot of plays that I thought he would have made that Taylor didn't make. Now, I haven't watched every inning of every game, but Taylor's 10% better than most center fielders or 15% or whatever, and Buxton's 50% better than they are. So.
I wonder if you could do what they did 10 years ago when they had multiple center fielders and Denard Span had some injury issues, right? As I say this, it's probably more dangerous for Buxton to play a corner spot. He would cover less ground, but he'd be running into the wall in fall territory. Seriously.
It's right, though.
Yeah. Don't make him make spontaneous decisions in the outfield. Let's just – you want to get him out there where he can run full speed and just say, don't hit the wall, please. But
keep him as far away from walls as possible. Center field is the place
to do this whole – Phil, were you down there that year in spring training? When the first game of the year, like the second inning, he ran 120 miles an hour into the board, into the center field. What are you doing? It's the first exhibition game. You know, and
he plays like he's durable. That's his problem. He plays like he plays the game like he doesn't get hurt. And it's like, dude, no one gets hurt as much as you.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, he was a superstar running back in high school football. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody in the SEC wanted him. He was fantastic. And he had to be a lot skinnier then, too, right? But I guess nobody ever tackled him because he ran away from him.
That's what I was going to say. He probably didn't get hit back then.
Yeah, but I know Kelly, when I was out seeing Kelly a couple of weeks ago, he said, you know, this other guy's pretty good, but he said, I've never seen anything like him. Buxton going in the gaps. And he says, I miss that. I miss seeing Buxton go in the gaps. We all do, but he looks like a much better hitter this year than he was last year, too. Last year, he hit all the home runs, but he batted .218 and struck out all the time.
Yeah.
This year, he's not nearly as inept at the plate. So I guess
he's some walks, too. Getting out. I mean, just I feel like it was almost like an ego or pride thing. He didn't like to draw walks for a long time in his career, right? But
I don't know what. His
Torrey Hunter was the same way, too. He just wanted to swing at everything, you know?
Hey, this Julian kid, he had two hits in the first inning yesterday and, you know, cheap home run and a buddy. The other one hit the wall in right field. Have you looked at his on-base percentages? Unbelievable. They're all way over 400. Yeah, that's why they're. And the one ball, risky ball they hit to him yesterday, he actually caught. It was It looked a little iffy, but he did kind of backhand it and catch it and look and then throw the guy out. But he's not much of a second baseman. Not much of a second baseman, but who cares? He could be the long-awaited leadoff hitter, right?
Well, if he's going to get on base.
Mm-hmm. So then, but if he's your starting second baseman, then what do we do with Jorge? You know, so too many good infielders. Who needed Louis? Who cares if he's hitting 500?
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to, this Julian, he was an 18th round draft pick by the Twins back in 2019.
I wrote about him. They gave him $493,000 to sign as an 18th rounder. He only was an 18th rounder because by some quirk, he was eligible for the draft after his sophomore season, which means he could argue, you know, when you go back into the draft after you're a senior, you have no options, but he could go in as a junior, and he's told everybody he wanted $500,000 or he's going to go back to Auburn. So everybody stayed away from him. And finally the Twins, like they always do, saved a lot of money with their top 10 guys. So they that the most they could scrounge up was $493,000, and they gave it to him.
Yeah.
So and then a month later, he's playing for Canada in the Pan Am Games and blows out his elbow and has Tommy John surgery and misses the 2020 season.
He missed the COVID season anyway.
Yeah. I asked Falvey how puckered up they were after that happened. It happens in baseball. I said, you can't convince me you gave $493,000 to an 18th rounder and he gets a Tommy John immediately that you aren't a little shook up, right?
Yeah. So you mentioned his on-base percentages. So he has played in the minor leagues, and most of this is his only games at AAA are the 9 games he's played this year. So most of this is AA and high A. He's played 234 career games, 1,000 plate appearances in the minor leagues. He has a .437 on base percentage.
Yeah,
over 1,000 plate appearances. Wow. That's insane.
Yeah, it is. He will draw some walks, that's for sure. That's they say. I asked him. I said, "Is he one reason you were willing to trade Arraez?" And he said, "Well, you know, Royce Lewis, blah blah blah." And I said, "Come on, you know, Royce Lewis." I think that they. I think they were dazzled by him at Wichita last year, so they were ready to put him in the lineup, I think. But now we'll see.
Your desire for Falvey to tell you the truth is admirable. It ain't happening.
Come on, guy.
Yeah, but the thing about him is you can argue with him, you know, when he won't get to the other guys are just, you know, just blow you off completely. I mean, Garrett, I think, can tell you the truth, but but the other GMs in town aren't going to.
Tim Connelly, can't even find him.
You know, he's out there creating an elite organization. So what do you think tonight, fellas? Most everybody thinks they're going to win, huh?
You know,
I'm not sure.
Well, I wouldn't. I guess I here's where I'm at with this. I think both outcomes are great for the Timberwolves.
Yes, right.
If they win, they get to go play the Nuggets, who are they're a one seed, but not really, you know. And they might be able
to. They can win a game or two against them.
Absolutely, they go play six games, get Anthony Edwards a little more postseason experience, and you know, and at least get to the point that you were last year. Go six games against a good team, and all right, and then you reevaluate. And if they lose, well, maybe it starts some fireworks this offseason, and you know, maybe there's a Gobert trade or. I think if they lose, it just leads to a lot of fun speculation about what might happen in July.
How about the new lingo, though? The new narrative now is, hey, everything's fine, and Rudy wouldn't have played anyway because he had a bad back. They're so full of horse crap, and they love us to believe everything they tell us. This is the new, that's all you hear on the broadcast now is – I don't know who does the game tonight. That it's national, right? So we don't get to hear.
ESPN, right? I think tonight it's Friday night.
But the new narrative is Rudy wouldn't have played anyway, and he said that. And so what happens? He get booed? Does he get booed when he comes off the bench tonight?
No, he apologized.
I think he gets cheers. I think we're all like, you know, it's all forgiven.
If he gets cheered tonight, then this is, as you guys have been pointing out, and I have to some degree, we have an entirely new sports audience in the Twin Cities. They don't like 77-year-old cranky SOBs who are telling them the truth. They don't, or the truth is we shit. They want us to like our teams. Part of fandom is being mad, right? Nobody wants to be mad anymore. Yeah. So.
I think there's a group there's a group of Timberwolves fans that they just have decided, you know what? It's been 34 years of muck, and we're just going to be happy and positive.
Yeah, right.
It's like the fan. I will say this: the Timberwolves fans have been great this year in that arena.
It's been amazing in attendance. And I was having this thought, okay, I gotta write tonight. I gotta write, 8:30 tip off, so you won't even have to, you can't wait to even see what's happening. 8:45 tip off. And I was thinking, okay, bash the head up. And then I had, this has been one of the most interesting seasons they've ever had. And wins and losses 50-50. But this is incredibly more interesting than most of their seasons because the unpredictability of I was absolutely convinced they were going to lay down against the Lakers, and then they ended up, they were going to be heroes, and then they kicked it away anyway. But that season, that game was the season, don't you think? It's like,
yes.
Hey, we're good.
Yep.
No, we stink.
No, we're not. Yep. 100%.
We're either good or we stink. We don't know which it is,
And we still don't. We still don't.
They don't go away. They're cockroaches.
Yeah, they are. It's been way more, way more interesting than the 14 years in the wilderness where they, about 10 or 11 of those, they lost 55 or whatever it was, So.
The amazing thing about this team, and this is where people kind of, when they write the Timberwolves off, they actually have one of the best records in the Western. I think it's like the third best record against above 500 teams in the Western Conference. And they have 10 losses to teams fighting for the number one overall pick. If they were, instead of 5-10 in those games, if they were 10-5, they wouldn't have had to play the Lakers the other day in a play-in. Rudy could have rested his back spasms.
Yes.
They're probably not punching each other in the final game of the season, right? They're just...
No, they're not punching a wall in the final game of the season. That's stupid. That is a real disaster for this team, not having him, guard people. Yes. McDaniel.
I mean, couldn't you just throw a cast on it and run him out there?
Hey, 19. Okay, this isn't exactly recent. Louis Hudson, Archie Clark, and Don Yates integrate basketball, and the Gopher basketball team did not have any black guys still. Louis Hudson and Archie Clark, and he came in as freshmen when they weren't eligible in 61 or 2, something like that. There were more people going to watch the freshmen that year than were watching. They have freshman games and watch. But Louis Hudson was the greatest Gopher ever, probably. But he broke his shooting hand in like the sixth or seventh game of the year. He played left-handed the rest of the season and averaged maybe 16 or 17 instead of 25.
Wow.
But he played left-handed. So
let's go. We don't even need Jay McDaniels to shoot, right? Just stand in front of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander all night.
Really. Yes, yes.
Royce, here's the column. Pre-game, you need to go in the tunnel and find out exactly where that curtain is in relation to the wall so we know if this leak is pure BS or just partial BS.
I am going to go. That's a very good idea. I'm going to go inspect the tunnel and see how she looks. You know, they should have a – what did they famously – who was – remember the guy in – was it spring training or someplace where he ran into the wall in Clearwater? And they did an outline of Butch Husky here. Yeah, they went to the. They should have a. They should have an outline of the fist on the curtain.
Punch.
Right?
There's a wall behind this curtain. Be a warning sign.
Yes, that's true.
Amazing.
How about our Rays, man?
13-0.
The Reds. You see this Red Sox lineup? Unbelievable.
Well, so I just saw. Here's what they're doing, apparently. So Jared Carrabas, who was Barstool baseball guy, now he's at, I think, DraftKings, big Boston sports guy, and he just tweeted, "I hope Shohei Ohtani is enjoying Boston today."
Oh, really?
That's what Red Sox fans want. They're like the 14th payroll now instead of number two, and they're doing it to clear room for, you know, $50 million a year for Shohei Ohtani. I think that's what they want.
Well, I texted Shaughnessy yesterday and said, did you ever think Red Sox Nation would be jealous of the Rays, you know, with their fanatical fan base? And he called it the worst lineup of his lifetime.
Yeah.
And he's almost 70, so I don't think it's that bad, but it is awful. Now they got some guys hurt, too, but Devers and nobody, it's incredible.
Yeah,
the Twins are the kings of Fort Myers.
I think Boston's had enough over the past 20 years.
Yes,
they can take a minute here.
They have had enough, but right. Tampa 13-0, baby. I was watching them for a minute yesterday. They're behind 3-1 in the fifth, and 10 minutes later they're ahead 8-3. You know,
it's unbelievable. $54 million payroll. $54 million payroll.
Yeah.
Amazing.
All right, Jets.
All right, Pat. We'll recap Twins Yankees with you on Monday. See ya.
Okay. See ya. Goodbye.
All right. There he is. Patrick Royce Unchained here on Score North.